Good morning. I'm beginning to understand that this day, today, is Esther Zurov's day. Okay. I just want to say I didn't go to YU, but my wife did. Okay. So anyway, we congratulate you, and if you're on it, you're on it. Litzono shel Adam zeu klodo. Okay. If last week the shiur was a tale of two psukim, we talked about the last pasuk in Parashat Vayigash and the first pasuk in Parashat Vayichi. This week it's going to be a tale of one single solitary pasuk, and the pasuk carries so much meaning and so much significance. I don't think that we will be able to plumb the depths of that pasuk, but we're going to try. We'll try. And it's the first pasuk in Parashat Shemot. Ve'ele Shemot b'nei Yisrael ha'ba'im Mitzrayma. These are the names of the children of Israel. Haba'im, who are coming to Egypt. Eit Yaakov, with Yaakov, ish u'beito ba'u. Each man and his family came. We'll see a number of other pesukim, because the pasuk, of course, exists within a context. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Binyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, the 12 tribes. Vayehi kol nefesh yotzei yerech Yaakov. All the souls who came out of Yaakov were 70 nefesh, 70. V'Yosef hayavim Mitzrayim, Yosef was in Egypt. Vayomach Yosef v'chol echad v'chol ador ahu. Yosef died, and all of his brothers, and in that entire generation. Ubnei Yisrael paru vayishditzu vayirbu vayatzmu ba'od ma'od vatimalei ha'aretz otam. And the children of Israel, they were fruitful, and they were many, and they multiplied, and they were very strong, and the land became full with them. Vayokom melech chadash al Mitzrayim, and who king arose over Egypt, ashelo yadat Yosef, who did not know Yosef. We did in passing mention last week that there is a lot of historical evidence to say that this was indeed a new king, a new dynasty, the 19th dynasty, the 18th during which Yosef was the leader of Egypt. It was one that passed from the sea, and there was a new one. There was a conquest, there was an invasion, and now it's a new it's a new government. A new government that most probably is very unhappy with the previous government. They threw them out. So that they really don't know Yosef, or they don't want to know Yosef. And he said to his people, this new paro, behold, this people, the children of Israel, are many and mightier than us. Let's deal wisely with him. Pen year belesti. Multiply Vahoyaki to Krenu Lachomer. It will come to pass when there will be war. V'nosavkam hu al sonenu. He will join the enemy. These are a potential fifth column in Egypt, and we have to know how to deal with them wisely. V'nilcham v'anu, he will wage war with us. V'alom in haaretz, Rashi says, tupshatim. Either he will go up from the land, or it means that we will have to leave the land. We will be cast out. Certainly is. Once we're talking about this historic approach, that the 19th dynasty, by the way, were people who came from outside Egypt. They were invaders. So therefore, if they are invaders who threw out the previous dynasty, they might very well feel that the same thing can happen to them at some point. Not only that it may happen to them, if they are a new dynasty, there most probably are pockets of resistance, those in a sense who've gone underground, those who are waiting for the moment that they will be able to rise up against the invaders. We're talking about a very volatile situation. But remember, that's one pshat. There is another pshat that says that it's really the same dynasty, the same paro. And despite the fact that it's the same paro, you know, that's one doesn't like to be indebted to somebody forever. All right, you did me a favor once. Enough. That's it. No more. All right. So now, first problem with the first pasuk. The first problem with the first pasuk is that it already appeared in Parsha Vayigash. The totality of the pasuk appeared earlier. And there in number two you have it. In Parsha Vayigash, when they in fact arrive, it says, Ve'ela Shemot B'nei Yisrael, these are the names of the children of Israel. Haba'im Mitzrayma, Yaakov, who one of Yaakov and his children, and Bechor Yaakov, Ruvain. And there, of course, they list not only the children, not only the 12 tribes, they also list the grandchildren. And then at the end of that section, after all of the children and grandchildren are mentioned, it says, Kol HaNefesh HaBol Yaakov Mitzrayma, all who came with Yaakov to Mitzrayim, Yotzei Yerecho, who came from him, Milvad Neshei B'nei Yaakov, aside from the wives of the sons of Yaakov, Kol Nefesh, they were all together 66. The children of Yosef were another two, and therefore when you take the whole total counting, Yosef and Yaakov, we have a total of 70 people that came to Egypt. So really everything was already said in Parsha Vayigash. What's the point of it being repeated here? There are going to be simple textual answers, and there will be others. One of the answers, of course, may very well be by taking a closer look at not merely what is repeated. Are there any differences between the way it is written in Vayigash and the way it's written here? And I believe that there's one significant difference, and that significant difference is in a sense going to set the stage for a lot of what's going to happen in Parashat Shemot, and for that matter, in Sefer Shemot. The end of the first pasuk, let's take a look at it again. Ve'ele Shemot b'nei Yisrael, these are the names of the children of Israel who are coming to Egypt. Et Yaakov ish u'beito ba'u. What does Ish Ubeito mean? What do you think Ish Ubeito means? Family. Wait a minute. Malka, you're going to steal the whole shiur. You can't do that. The simple meaning of Ish Ubeito would mean children, grandchildren, because remember, they're not listed here. Here we don't have the list of all of the grandchildren and others. So Ish Ubeito is a simple way to say all of the whole family. But wait a minute, there's one thing that is written in Parashat Vayigash that is not written here. In Parashat Vayigash it says, Kol HaNefesh HaBol Yaakov Mitzrayim, all those who came with Yaakov to Egypt, Yotzei Yerecho Milvad Neshei B'nei Yaakov. It doesn't say anything about the wives of the sons of Yaakov. Here, in Vayigash, it says the wives of the sons of Yaakov. In Shemot, it doesn't say it. Unless, of course, there's a new term that is now created that appears for the first time. And that new word, that new phrase, is the one that's going to speak about their wives. In Vayigash, it's Neshei B'nei Yaakov. Over here, it's Ish Ubeito. Ish Ubeito. And the fact is, the Gemara tells us at the beginning of Masechet Yoma, the Gemara says the following, that the Kohen Gadol, the halacha is the Kohen Gadol who's going to function on Yom Kippur. And by the way, without the Kohen Gadol, there is no service on Yom Kippur. It can only be done by the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol must be married. To the point even that the Mishnah says that there is another woman held in waiting to be his wife in the event that his wife might die. How do we know it? Because it says in Torah, the chiper ba'ado uba'ab beito. He has to be a source of atonement for himself and for his house, beito. And the Gemara says, beito zu ishto. Beito is his wife. So what happened up here is the following. Number one, instead of the wives being mentioned at the end as they are in Vayigash, they're mentioned in the first pasuk. And the significance of it is simply the following, because what's going to happen in all of Sefer Shemot is going to be number one, and it begins in Parashat Shemot. The significance of Neshot Yisrael, they are going to be the Miyaldot HaIbriyot, they're going to be Shifra and Pua, there's going to be a Yocheved, there's going to be a Miriam, who in a sense is the catalyst that Moshe is born. There is the Chazal that says, Bizchut Nashim Tzitchoniyot, because of the pious women, Jews were indeed redeemed from Mitzrayim. So Ish Ubeito appears here at the beginning. It's a completely different term than Neshei B'nei Yaakov. Neshei B'nei Yaakov means, you know, it's a term that does not describe, it just tells us a fact, the wives of the sons of Yaakov. The moment you say Ish Ubeito, you are now saying that the woman is an extremely, extremely important ingredient in this whole structure of the Jewish people. And therefore, ultimately, what's going to happen? Where is Pesach and the redemption going to be celebrated? Is it going to be celebrated in the city squares throughout Eretz Yisrael? They're going to go out into the streets, independence, and they're going to bang each other on the head with plastic hammers. What's going to be the celebration of this great freedom that's going to come? It's going to be precisely at the place where the strength of the Jewish people was drawn so that they should survive it all and ultimately go out to freedom. And that was Ish Ubeito. So this is said immediately in the first pasuk, and the difference between it, number one, in where it's positioned, and the term that's used in distinction from the Neshei B'nei Yaakov, the wives of the sons of Yaakov, completely different expression. Ish Ubeito is evaluating the not merely the contribution, but the fact that the women were an essential part. Without them, it just wouldn't have happened. Now, I'm sure you must feel good about it, but that's not the reason why I'm saying it. I have to take a look at a pasuk in Torah, and I have to explain the pasuk. You know, and the fact is that it's so blatant, it's so clear. When you compare what it says here and what it says in Parashat Vayigash, it's clear that there is a message. There is a message being presented here in this very first pasuk. Now, I may not be going in the order of the pasuk. I started at the end of the pasuk. So, because the problems of the pasuk are going to go from beginning to end. We really even have to spend some time talking about the very first letter, let alone the word, the Vav of the Eile. But before we get to that, Habba'im. What tense is Habba'im?
Present
tense. Alright, now, in Parshat Vayigash, I can understand why it says Habba'im, present tense, because that's when they come. Do you know where Parshat Sefer Shemot begins? 300 years later, Yosef has died, all of his brothers have died, the whole generation. Or, I mean, 200 for sure. Okay, whatever it is. We're talking about a long period of time. You certainly can't use the term Habba'im about something that took place a long time before that. And the fact is that the Medrash, we don't have to look at it now, we may get to it later, it's on the other side, you don't have to look. Rashi, the Medrash says, Habodim Mitzrayim, all those who come to Egypt, ki'ilu as though they entered that day. It was as though they entered that day. The Medrash at a different point says, V'chi hayom ba'u l'mitzrayim? The Medrash is asking the question that we're talking about. Is it today that they came into Egypt? So it was a shiur that Rav Soloveitchik once gave, and he asks this question. He asks, why does it use the present tense? Now, what's interesting is that in this pasuk, what do we have at the end of the pasuk? We also have the word ba'u. So the word ba'u is already telling us that it's different than what was said in Vayigash. In Vayigash, it only used the present, and over here it uses the present, and it also uses the past. But it still does not answer. Why does it say Hamboyim? It could have said Eile Shmot B'nei Yisrael or B'nei Yaakov Asher Ba'u, that came to Mitzrayim. Why does it say the present tense? The Rav says there are two reasons for it. Two reasons for the use of the present tense Hamboyim Mitzrayim. And he says that they are the two reasons are significant in the fact that we will be able to start understand a great deal of Jewish history. We may understand Sefer Shemot a great deal better. He says it's fascinating. Jews have been in the country for a few hundred years. They've been involved in every level of Egyptian life, in business, in commerce, in government, in science. They've been an integral part. They're all over the country. They are making a major contribution. And it makes no difference how much time has passed. You know what they are? Yiddish, most probably, would say it best. Naye gekimene. Do you know what a naye gekimene is? A newcomer. They're here 200 years, and they're newcomers. Haboyim Mitzrayim means, regardless of how long they've been here, they are still viewed by the Egyptians as new immigrants. But he thought, all of them have been born in Egypt. They're all blue-blooded Egyptians. They all speak Egyptian without an accent. And you know what? They are still the ones, or the first ones, who may come to mind as enemies of the regime. What are you talking about? We're Egyptians. We're born here. This is our native land. Doesn't make any difference. The Rav says that's what we're also going to see in this sedra, as in the next four or five sedras. We're going to find the use of a word that does not appear often in Tanakh. They're going to be referred to as the Ivrim, the Miyaldot HaIvriot. The word Ivri comes from the word Eiver, as Avram Avinu was described as Avram HaIvri. Avram, the Hebrew, Eiver means the side of a river. Kol Ha'olam, the whole world is on one side, and Avram is on the other side. They can be living in Mitzrayim for 200 years, and they are still looked upon as strangers, foreigners, newcomers, greenhorns, Flüchtlingen. Was that a word that you remember? Flüchtlingen. Refugees. I remember that yet from my youth. Flüchtlingen. That's what they are. And the Rav uses an example. Rabbeinu Gershom Maor Hagola lived in Germany in the year 1000, and there was a Jewish community in Germany for 1,000 years. During the course of that 1,000 years, there were many Slavic and other nations that moved into Germany and simply disappeared completely. No identity was left. Nothing. But from Rabbeinu Gershom Maor HaGola in the 10th or the 11th century,
Jews never cease to stick out like a sore thumb in Egypt. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. While dozens, if not what, there were tribes, there were Huns, there were Visigoths, there were a lot of Slavic people that came into Germany. Nothing left. Absolutely, they became mainstream Germany, that was it. And 1,000 years after Rabbeinu Gershom, Yoragola, Jews are still a unique entity standing out by themselves. So he says this is the source, on the one hand, this is the source of anti-Semitism. For some strange reason, everybody melts, and they don't melt. Everybody becomes submerged, and they don't become submerged. They're just there. They are the natural ones to point to and say that they are a potential fifth column. But he said, so therefore he says that's the meaning of the word habba'im, in present tense. They can be there 200 years and the Egyptians look at them like they just came, or they're just coming. But he says there's a flip side to this as well. There's the second point of view. The second point of view is not how the Egyptians look at the Jews. How do the Jews look at themselves? So here we know all of the famous Mamores Chazal. Chazal said b'schut arba devarim, there were four merits why Jews were redeemed from Egypt. They didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't reveal secrets. There weren't people who betrayed Jews. V'lo bitlu kabila, and they kept the mitzvah of milah. And the Medrash says it very nicely. Ruven yorad, Ruven olah. Shimon yorad, Shimon olah. They came down to Mitzrayim with the names Ruven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. And when they went out of Mitzrayim, it's Ruven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. There's something within the Jew that he doesn't melt. He simply doesn't melt. And his inability to melt is his greatest strength. There's a certain stubbornness, an akshonus, so that they look at themselves as Haboyim Mitzrayim, and the Egyptians look at them as Haboyim Mitzrayim. There's something about Jews that they it doesn't happen. And when it does happen, of course it becomes a terrible tragedy. There will be a hardcore, and there was a core, a large number in Mitzrayim that did become completely lost within the Egyptian maelstrom forever. And that we have that in parts of the world today. For some strange reason, the Rav, in that year, what to him was a painful experience, of just not being taken seriously and looked upon as, Naya Gekimena, the greenhorns. So he talks about 1943. In 1943, the day before Erev Pesach, 500 Orthodox rabbis went to Washington. They knew already what was going on in Europe. There was, during the entire Second World War, there was no other single demonstration by Jews in America on behalf of the Jews of Europe, except for this one. And we're talking that it wasn't the day of age of planes. Rabbis before Pesach, you understand, came from across America by train, by bus, but you schlepped me, you come in Washington. And there are pictures of Rabbi Lazar Silver, of Rav Soloveitchik and others all marching toward the White House. And first of all, there was tremendous courage. Today, demonstrations, there are dime a dozen. Everybody demonstrates, You get your wings after 5 demonstrations, you're already a professional demonstrator. You put on a green cap, then you don't even have to go to a demonstration, and you're a demonstrator. But to have done that in the United States at a time when President Roosevelt was was a near deity who was worshipped by Jews and non-Jews in America. And then he says, and he refused to see us. The Rav, and you can hear the way he writes it, he refused to see us. He had us see, a delegation saw the vice president, and that was it, and they knew that it was absolutely meaningless. A sense like, we don't count. 500 rabbis come to Washington, and they don't count. Like, they're different. You're not real Americans. It was a devastating feeling. It was a devastating feeling. He says, thank God, after the establishment of the State of Israel, already Jews began to speak out on behalf of Klal Yisrael. But there at that tragic moment in Jewish history...
Excuse me, didn't he send out Secretary Morgenthau to speak? I am
the
Jew, he said.
He sent out Morgenthau, and then they took the... they were received by the vice president. Who was the vice president then?
Wallace.
Wallace? Wallace. But they knew that he would do nothing. They knew that he would do nothing.
Morgenthau as a political ploy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Right. In other words, he felt that 500 rabbis who were talking about, I mean, this was the cream of America, we're just not taking seriously.
It was a terrorist for the Babbitt to send Morgenthau. Morgenthau already was a reform Jew.
Anyway, so Habo'im Mitzrayim, the Rav says, the present tense of Habo'im Mitzrayim tells us two things. That we're going to be looked at by others always as ones who only came now. Which in a sense is negative. But there's a great blessing involved in that when we see ourselves as never being really fully part of this culture. But he clarifies it, and this he clarifies in a number of his writings, where he says, we will participate in every area of life. We will make positive contributions to every area of life. But the non-Jewish public has to understand that there's one part of our neshama that is reserved, and nobody has entree there. There's a relationship, a covenant that we have with God. That covenant with God is more significant and more powerful than anything else. There, that's no man's land. Nobody has the right to intrude or interfere there. And nobody should have reason to interfere there. That's our conscience. That's our neshama. He even wrote this years later with regard to our relationship to the secular state of Israel. And he said very clearly, should that state ever demand of us that we compromise our covenant with God, then we're going to have to tell them straight out, this is no state of mine. I will give you everything, I will give you all of my loyalty. But you cannot invade that area of my neshama and my consciousness, which represents the relationship that I have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it means, therefore, both the tzaddis of Klal Yisrael are because they look at us as strangers, but our strength comes from precisely the same reason, because we see ourselves as different. I have a young man who governs in my shul, who is a former member. Oh no, there's, I don't think there's such a thing as a former member. Once a member, always a member of the JDL, Jewish Defense League. So he comes to me on Shabbos, and he brings me a sefer that was written by Rav Meir Kahana, Hashem Yikom Damo. It's a few hundred pages. Just on Parashat Shemot. You know, I've said in the past, people give me things to read. They're outside. But some of the stuff is fascinating. Your book. That book is unbelievable. I can't put it down. Elizabeth gave me a book by Robert Bork, slouching toward Gemara? And your comments are fascinating.
It's Gemaric, I can't put it down.
We're probably going to make a shiur about it one of these days. So you know what I did? I opened up the Sefer. Magnificent. Magnificent, magnificent, magnificent. He says such beautiful stuff there. And he makes one comment that takes a few pages. I will elaborate it on in my own way. Take a look at the second side. Number 5. Those of you who attend Rabbi Gordon's class most probably learned this halacha recently. The Rambam says the following: Asur latzeit me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz la'olam. One is prohibited from going out of Eretz Yisrael to chutz la'aretz forever. The forever most probably means you can leave for a brief period of time or a limited period of time, but just leave Eretz Yisrael forever you can. Ella, but there are a number of circumstances under which permission is granted to leave. Lilmo Torah, to study Torah, or Lisa Yisha, or to marry, or Lahatzil min Hagayim, if there are Jews out there that need to be saved. V'yachzor la'aretz. You know, if you have to go to Entebbe to save Jews, so you can go out and Tarkit, come back to Eretz Yisrael. V'chein yotzei hu l'schor, a person can also go out of Eretz Yisrael in order to do business. Aber nicht nur in der Chutzlarz, to live permanently in Chutzlarz, also. Ella and Cain, unless there's famine in Eretz Yisrael, this terrible famine, and he describes the famine, and Cain chosak shom harav, if there's terrible famine, ad she nase shov et dinner, chitin, v'shnei dinner, the prices have doubled, the grain that would cost a dinar, now cost 2 dinar, we're talking about the 100% inflation. Bamed were mamurim, kishoyun amoyz, mitzuyoyz, tapeyrez, biyoke. Money there is, it's extremely expensive to buy anything. Avlim apeyrez bizol, v'lo yimotze, lo yimzamos, what happens if food, you can buy it cheap, but there's no money. There's no money. There's absolute poverty. V'lo b'med, you stack or a person doesn't have a way to find money or to earn money. V'ovda prutam in akis, there's no money left. Yetze l'chol makom shim shabonava. Let a person leave Eretz Yisrael to any place where he will find it easier for him.
Rabbi
Gold,
give me a I think that there should be a quick question on this Rambam in the view of Jewry. The Israeli paper, the English one, Yerushalayim quoted about 2 weeks ago, that half the Jews in America are intermarried. Less than half the Jews give their children a Jewish education.
We have to get the shiur done. We're all with you. We're all with you. And I will tell you after class privately what I plan on doing about it. Okay. Now, even though under those extreme circumstances one is permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael, einon midat chasidut. Truly pious people would not leave Eretz Yisrael even under those extreme circumstances. And he says, it's a gemara sh'arei machlon v'chiyon shnei gedolei ador hayu. Machlon and Chiyon were two great people in their generation. They were the children of Elimelech and Naomi. They left Eretz Yisrael because there was a terrible tzara. It was very bad in Eretz Yisrael. And they were found guilty and to be destroyed before God. They shouldn't have gone out even under those extreme circumstances. Number 6 has two brief quotations from the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says the following. The halach is on Chol HaMoed, the person is not allowed to shave. You know, men who shave are not allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. Or for that matter, both men and women can't take haircuts. But there are a number of people who are exempt from this. A person who was ill and wasn't able to, and now he became well on Chol HaMoed, he can take a haircut or shave.
a person who was imprisoned and now he's out of prison, he got out of prison, Cholamoid is permitted to shake. And then some Habor, maybe Dinas Hayom, somebody comes from outside of the country. So it says the following. Oh, first line, at the end of the first line, it says, Oh, Shabbat be'erev ha'regel, or he arrives back home on Erev Yontif, v'lo hoyo shahud bayom legalech, he came back from, and he didn't have enough time to shave. V'hu shalo yotzo me'eretz yischoy l'chutz l'aretz l'tayer. The only circumstances under which this permission is not granted is if somebody left Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laretz for a tiyul. How do you like that? I mean, if I'm going to start shaking you up for the next few minutes, it's okay. Be shooken up, but just withhold. Yeah. And, no, that's all right. I like using my own colorful language from time to time. Yes, shaking up is correct. So you just have to hang in over there. You know, it's clear the Shulchan Aruch is saying, and such is the halacha, you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for a tiyul. We have to see under what circumstances is one permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael. So there's a great deal of source material. There are many responses and many chus that were written. To take you through that would be a long shiur. I'm going to sort of cut things down for you so that we will minimize the amount of suffering that you will have to go through. There's another halacha. The second is a halacha that appears in Hilchos Shabbos. There it's talking about you're not allowed to go on a boat less than 3 days before Shabbos. Because the first 3 days one can experience seasickness. If you go earlier, so you get used to it, so by Shabbos you're not going to be seasick. This is halacha in Shulchan Aruch. However, you can travel if there is some mitzvah involved. The Shulchan Aruch earlier, it doesn't say it here, but the Shulchan Aruch earlier said a person who gets a boat that's going to Eretz Yisrael, and it's Erev Shabbos, it's a mitzvah to go Eretz Yisrael, you can go to you can get on Erev Shabbos, or if it's a caravan that's going through a desert, you can go even if it's Erev Shabbos. And then underlined over there, Yesh Omrim, there are those who say Shekol Makom Shaltam Holech L'schora, any place where a person goes in order to do business. O lirot pnei chavero. Here is an idea that's being presented by the Shulchan Aruch. If you're traveling to see a friend, choshev hakol bar mitzvah, that's considered mitzvah. We're not talking about somebody who goes to see parents or relatives, but even if one is traveling in order to see a friend, that, by halachic definition, is called dvar mitzvah. Ve'eino chashuv dvar harishut, and it's not called something optional. Rak kishaholeh l'tayel. Only if one goes l'tayel. I'm not going to see anybody. I'm going to see the world. I'm going to see the world. Please hang in yet. Don't. Ve'al kein nagu b'k'tzas mekomos. Therefore, there are places where the minik is, the custom is lahakel b'inyan haflagas hasfinos, that people take a lenient position with regard to getting onto a boat less than 3 days before Shabbos, v'halichas shayara tok shlok shesomim, or joining a caravan in less than 3 days before Shabbos, kichosh makol dvar mitzvah, everything is dvar mitzvah except to you. The England Chotiyadan, you shouldn't object, hold, yes, the Mamashi is spoken, they have enough opinions on which they can depend. So this has been dealt with in a lot of responsa. So I'm going to give you when it comes down to the bottom line, you see, once we have already opened up the possibility, once the Shulchan Aruch has said to see a friend, it means there has to be something significant in it. There has to be. So what happens is the following. Litagel. What happens if somebody's going to see the Grand Canyon, the Alps, Olympic National Park? So now, it could be just a plain teal, or one is inspired by seeing, one wants to see God's creations. One wants to see God's creations, the whole teal becomes mitzvah. The whole teal is mitzvah. Not only the whole teal is mitzvah, it's a big mitzvah. When we really come down to the bottom line, trying to figure out what kind of a teal could be prohibited today. So I can only think of one. If somebody goes to Chutz La'aretz, when we were in Prague, so you saw these places, a few places where it says big sign casino. And there are signs in Czech, Hungarian, English, and Hebrew about the rules of getting into the casino. Somebody who leaves Eretz Yisrael to go gamble, that's what happens in these casinos. We didn't go in. Maybe for the, you know, to know the halacha, I should have maybe gone in and investigate what takes place there. All right? Otherwise, it really, the fact is that it's true about everything we do in life. The halacha has a way of taking something that may otherwise be a mundane physical activity, and you can turn it into a mitzvah. Shulchan Aruch said, a person can eat because he's hungry. A person can eat because he enjoys eating. A person can eat because he wants to have the strength to be able to study Torah, to perform mitzvahs. You can take the simple physical act and turn it into something very sublime. You can take a tiyul and remove from it the halachic prohibition of tiyul by virtue of the fact that you are going to see God's creation. But there's one other significant factor that is brought in to play over here in the postum of our time. And it's a sign of the times. And what happens if you're going out of the country, you need a little menuchas ha-nefesh. The tension, the problems, you just need to get away from it all for a week or two. So you should know, the halacha is for refuat ha-guf, if one is physically ill, one is permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael in order to seek help. The halacha holds that refuat ha-nefesh is precisely as significant and as important as refuat ha-guf. When we make a mishaberach, we make a mishaberach for a chola that God should bring refuat ha-guf and refuat ha-nefesh. And if you think it doesn't work, if you think we don't need this from time to time, we need it. We need it. I mean, one can even accomplish it. Maybe you don't have to go that far. You can go to a lap. But the halacha sees this as a significant factor. You may be wondering, or maybe you forgot already, you're so interested in this, you forgot, like, what's this have to do with the first pasuk in Shavuot? I haven't forgotten that that's what we're learning. Leaving the country for reasons of health are permitted. Nida shagam yitzil and nofesh. If a person goes out to rest, which is accomplished through a change of air and a change of atmosphere, that's also a need, permitted. If our rabbi is permitted that to make a little more money, you can go out to Chutzvarts. Halacha is somebody who has money. But he wants to make more, is permitted to go to Chutzah. The Rotzal HaHarviach Olvot, he wants to make more and more money. Lama lo natir gam harvachat haguf. Why shouldn't we also permit a person who's going out for physical or emotional well-being? She'ein o chuta mirevach shol nechosim. Physical or emotional well-being is no less than making more money.
Harvachas hanefesh ena pruta meharvachat haguf. The what the soul needs, what the one's neshama. And I don't mean neshama in the soul. We talk about, you know, just frame of mind. But frame of mind is not less than harvachas haguf. Al shneim onu mispal rufas hanefesh urufat haguf. Then he even used the term ivrur. Ivrur is, you know, air out. And we need it. We understand what it is. So therefore the conclusions are Yitzhiyah l'chutzaretz mutedet l'tzarah. Leaving for chutzaretz is mutter if there's a need. B'mizgeret ha-tzarech. Now when we're talking about what defines need, nitam l'chlo gam tiyul, you can also include a tiyul, shematarato, if the purpose is ri'iyat nifla'ot abriya, to see the amazing and wondrous parts of creation, the chen nofesh, to rest, o tiyul rufuat haguf or rufuat hanefesh, a tiyul that is for one's physical or emotional well-being. If your one is permitted to go out of the country, three, that we learned in the Shulchan Aruch, to see a friend, to help parents, elderly parents. He even talks about leaving Eretz Yisrael in order to go to graves of tzaddikim or to see the concentration camps. Mutter, it's an extremely important experience. But then he concludes by saying that though there are all of these, have to remember that Amram said that it's midas chasidus, it is piety, is not to go out of the country under under any circumstances. So we're not in that. You don't have to necessarily put yourself in that that category. If there is a, we know stories of even Jews that never left Yerushalayim. Jews that never left the Chutz Laaretz. I think we're still Naya Gekumina over here. We're Haboyim Eretz Yisrael. So we still need it. You know, so wait a minute. So what does this all have to do with the first pasuk? How does Yeshayahu describe going to Mitzrayim from Eretz Yisrael? Chapter 30 of Yeshayahu. Hoy, woe, hayordim Mitzrayim, are those who go down to Egypt. There was a famine in the land in Lech Lecha. Vayeded Avram Mitzrayim, and Avram went down to Mitzrayim. Leaving Eretz Canaan and going to Mitzrayim is Yerida. Why doesn't it say Eile Shemot B'nei Yisrael Hayordim Mitzrayim? That's Meir Kahana's question. And he says, obviously, and this is why I elaborated, there had to be a heter over here. If there is a heter, if there is permission granted, then it's not Yerida. You know how you have to describe it? You have to describe it as Habo'im Mitzrayim. Here there was the greatest heter of all. Remember, we learned it. We learned that when Yaakov hears that Yosef is alive, so he goes to Beersheba. And what is he troubled about? He's troubled about the fact that his grandfather, when there was a terrible famine in the land, went down to Mitzrayim. And by the way, it may be interesting to note, why indeed does it say if Abraham was in Canaan when there was a terrible famine, why does it say Vayeded Avraham Mitzrayim? It should have said he was brought to Mitzrayim, gave to Mitzrayim. No, sadly, because the Rabban says that Avraham, even under those circumstances, should not have gone to Mitzrayim. Yaakov now doesn't know what to do, because Avram did leave Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak was told by God, don't leave Eretz Yisrael. So what's Yaakov supposed to do? So he goes to Beersheba, and there God appears to him and he tells him, Anochi Edei Yucha, I'm going to go down with you, V'anochi El Chogam Olo, and I'm going to come up with you. He's getting the greatest heder of all, that the Ben Shalom wants him to be in the Tzayim. Because the experience in Mitzrayim ultimately is not going to be Yerida.
the experience in Mitzrayim is going to be an aliyah for Klal Yisrael. They are going to become a people there. The suffering is going to forge and form them into a people that will be able to survive under all circumstances through history. The suffering of Mitzrayim is going to inject the necessary humility into Klal Yisrael. As long as we have a sense of humility, we will survive. The moment that we begin to think that we are all powerful and almighty, then we are heading for trouble. I can't wait to get my hands on another book. It seems there's a book that's been written up about the terrible mistakes that were made by Israeli intelligence and the Israeli government in the weeks, months and weeks before the Yom Kippur War. There have been a number of articles about it. There was one in the Jerusalem Post. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. By the way, forgive me, I think that we can also say that there are mistakes, tragic mistakes that were made in the last 9 years. Couldn't see the reality before their very eyes. It's unbelievable. It's a frightening thing. A reality that anybody, simple people, were able to see. And we know now that it's true. Everybody knows it's true. Not to be able to see it. Not to be able to see it is only the result of
arrogance.
Of what?
Arrogance.
I know better. I know better. They'll never dare attack us. We're the strongest power in the Middle East. Destructive idea. In Mitzrayim, they're going to learn the humility. Humility is terribly important. You know what else they're going to learn in Mitzrayim? They're going to learn in Mitzrayim the might and the power of God Almighty. Because they reach a point where they are at the very edge, the abyss of despair. Nobody can ever get us out of here. And God does. As the Rav said, and we once quoted the Rav, he says, in Mitzrayim, Jews are going to come face to face with evil. And in order to truly appreciate good and humanity, you have to come face to face with absolute evil. He says good and evil sometimes can be like colors. If you really want to tell the difference between one color and the next, then you put them side by side and you take a look at the two of them. Then you learn to differentiate, you learn to discern. Because you need that closer look. Klal Yisrael had to come face to face with absolute criminal evil so that would be seared into their mind and their consciousness throughout all history. Coming to Mitzrayim was a necessary part of creating a great people. What did Hashem tell Yaakov? Anochi Eidei Yilcha, I'm going to go down with you. I'm going to make you there, the great God, I'm going to make you to a great people. So number one, there's a heter. Permission is granted by God to leave Eretz Israel and go to the time. Not only is permission granted, this has become necessary for the creation of a people that will ultimately bear the message throughout all of history that there is a God and God is one. So this already, in this pasuk, it cannot say, Eilesh Mot B'nei Yisrael, these are the names of the children of Israel, Hajordim Mitzrayim. It had to be Habohim Mitzrayim. It had to be Habohim Mitzrayim. What a very beautiful insight into the word Habayim. So we've talked about the meaning of Ish Ubeito. We also pointed out, in other words, Ish Ubeito is different than what it said in Parashat Vayigash, Neshev, one of his wives. The wife now becomes the house of Klal Yisrael that's going to be established. We talked about the Rav's two dimensions of Habayim, the present tense, Habayim Mitzrayim. how the non-Jew looks at us throughout history and how we see ourselves. The negative on their side and the positive on our side. And now why it doesn't say Hayardim. So we'll talk a moment about, since everybody talks just a few minutes, we have so much over here, but the maybe it's just worthwhile seeing the Ramban. Number three is the Ramban's introduction. The Ramban's, Nachmanides' introduction to the Book of Shmos. Hishlim ha-katuv sefer bereshitshu sefer ha-yitzira. The Pasuk finished the Book of Bereshit, which is the story of creation, b'chidush ha-olam, a world brought into being anew, v'yitzirat kol notzar, and the creation of every creature on the face of this earth. U'b'mikrei ha-avot kulam, he's giving a brief overview of Sefer Bereshit, and it talks about whatever happened to the fathers. Shehem ki'inyan yitzirah l'adam, he says that whatever happened to the fathers is also a form of creation, because the Ramban throughout the Bereshit said, Ma'aseh avot, whatever happened to the fathers is a simon, what's going to happen to the children. They are creating, they are planting Jewish history. They should call me today, and because whatever happened to them, to the fathers, tziyurei dvarim, are forms of words, lirmoz, lahodiyah, kol ha'atim avolem. This is an indication and a hint to let us know everything that's going to happen to the children. Once he finished the book of creation, where the groundwork is laid, he tchil sefer acha b'inyan ha'maseh ha'bo min ha'remazim ha'em. Do you know what Sefer Shemot is going to be? All of that which took place symbolically with the fathers is now going to become translated into action by the children. Yes, God told Abraham that your children are going to be enslaved and tortured in a foreign land, that ultimately they will return here. So while Bereshit is the story of the creation, the laying of the foundations, it now takes on action in Sefer Shemot. V'nityached Sefer Ve'ele Shemot was set aside b'inyan ha-galut ha-dishon, about the first exile. Ha-nigzar b'feirush, that was clearly decreed, God said it clearly to Abraham, u'b'g'ulam imenu, and the redemption from it. V'lachem chosa v'hitchil b'shemot yordei mitzchayim u'misparam. So here the Ramban is therefore going to explain why the repetition of this whole pasuk. So he said, therefore he began again by repeating the names of those who went down to Egypt and how many they were, even though this was already written. Because since this book, Shmot, is going to be the story of exile and redemption, the exile began then, when they came to Mitzrayim. When they came, that's when it began. Says the galus is never over until they ultimately return to their place. It's not going to end. That Rambam sees galus and geula as geographic. The galus is not over until they return to their place. And they return to the level of their fathers. When they left Egypt, even though they went out of the house of slavery, they're still called exiles. Because they were in a land that was not theirs. And as long as you're living in a land that's not yours, you're in exile. They were nebuchim b'midbar. They were confused out of the desert. When they came to Har Sinai, they made the Mishkan, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu returned the Hishra Shinato B'neim, and he brought his divine presence amongst them. Oz Shavu El Malat Avotam. So then they already returned to the level of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Shoyosod Alaka Alei Ohaleim. The secret of God was upon their tents, just as God dwelt in the tents of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. The Heim Heim HaMekava, they are the ones upon whom the divine presence rides. Then they were considered as redeemed. Therefore the completion of Sefer Shemot is with the Mishkan, because once the Mishkan is there and God's divine presence is amongst them. They are in that kind of a supreme spiritual land that they are no longer exiles, and it's only a matter of time before they will come to their own home. Yes?
What is it? What do you mean? The
Geula geography, or is it spiritual, or is it both? He said it's both. He said two things. The Ramban said they have to return to Ma'alat Avotam. They have to return to the level of their fathers. And number two, they have to be in a land that's their own. He made two conditions, only with those two. Okay, I got out of that, yeah.
You said
a few
minutes
ago that the suffering that we had to experience in this trial was finished with a certain level,
and we would be facing the same thing. Yes. And in that contrast with goodness,
we would
appreciate and understand
people, yes.
Why do we have to keep
learning that lesson? Oh, her question is, why do we have to keep learning that lesson? Let me take that question for homework.